Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the campfire. Turn the radio to the Dr. Drew and Bob This Life podcast.
And also remind to take the extra step and go to the app of your choice and subscribe and bookmark us on Dr.com and then rate us on iTunes and tell us whether you like Bob's intro or not. Tell us what you like about the show.
I listen to old-time radio on satellite.
I get it. Give us five-star ratings if you like what you hear and join the email list at contact.com and get the newsletter going out every Thursday. And we do send us some emails there. We try to get them into the show if we can. And we're always looking for callers. Mention This Life, and we do try to get you on the show. So it's our privilege, Bob. I'll let you. She was on. This guest was on the Weekly Infusion as well with me and Dr. Bruce, and I'll give you a chance to introduce her.
Talking medical stuff, Candy Finnegan. We were in supervision together. We are television counselors together. She's watched my progress, I think, as a counselor. I've gotten better, right?
Well, hold on a second. Let me introduce Candy a little more fully before we attack you.
She was always good right at the top.
Well, you know, what I remember the most about you was our dedication to Buddy Arnold.
Yeah.
We both had this love.
Groups with authority, and I was just like fumbling around.
Yeah, but you know, you were a lot more fun.
Candy is, of course, the addiction specialist interventionist from the show on A&E Intervention. You can follow her at CandyFinnegan.com or Twitter at Candy Finnegan, FINNIGAN. I was carefully schooled on. Or check out AETV.com for more of these interventions. And the book, When Enough is Enough, A Comprehensive Guide to Successful Intervention.
But you got to understand, it's funny that the two counselors on television were in supervision together, supervised by Buddy Arnold, together. It was crazy.
And we're still here.
I remember when I said, Buddy, you need to sign off my hours, and he got so frustrated. He doesn't like it one at a time. Just give me a page and tell me how much I write on it.
He goes, what I supervise?
That sounds like him. So Buddy Arnold was the head of musicians, or the sort of figurehead, literally.
Yeah. Oh.
Musician's Assistance Program.
He was larger than life.
It's now Music Cares. It's folded into that. And it's a gigantic program now that funds treatment of people who earned a living as a musician for addiction.
Yeah, I'm doing a thing on November 1st for them.
Yeah.
At the Grammy Museum. They have the Grammy Museum. They got the Grammy TV show. It's pretty big now.
You know, it's funny because when we first started it, because it was David Crosby and my husband,
Bonnie,
Mike Finnegan.
And Bonnie.
She wasn't there yet. And it was Buddy's accountant. And they were the four that went to the music union and said, we've got this great idea. It used to be called BizRap.
Oh, really?
And they met every week and had nothing to talk about but Tiny Tim. And that's who did our first fundraiser.
Tiny Tim?
Yeah.
Weird.
Well, there weren't a lot of people.
You know what, as it pertains to fundraising and raising funds for awareness and whatnot of addiction, we've got to get unified with all the different organizations running amok and in different directions. You did that rock and roll thing.
Rock to Recovery.
And then there was that thing in Washington.
Faces of Addiction.
Faces of Addiction.
Well, Candy knows them all.
But the point is, where's everyone going? It's like we all need to like get together, get in the ship together, start rowing.
Let's talk about it right off the bat, because Don Feltman is one of the greatest guys. He's the one behind that Washington thing. But when he went to our community of clinicians and stuff, there was chaos. I was on conference calls and it was chaos. Are they going to allow Suboxone people there? Are they going to do this? Are they going to do that?
Well, two of the guys came to my house that were on the board and they had both lost children.
That was a main point
to
of
addiction.
It.
Yes.
But to be fair, a lot of these, and this is not being critical, this is simply factual. A lot of these things that seem to grow up and run away are codependent parents who are still acting out their codependency.
Or their sorrow.
Well, it's all, to me, that's all the same.
So he said, I need, you know.
And I'm not saying that about this guy. I don't know this guy.
No, he was really nice. He's a sober guy.
Yeah. But the point being that when you want to do an event that affects Washington and the public, the recovery industry and professionals are all coming from all different angles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, Joe Walsh was there, but Joe Walsh's son was on the planning committee. And I honored that he you know, yeah. was just supporting his son.
No, it was great. It was
just the thing I kept saying is, okay, you have $7 million, you need $27 million, and now how much is going to t-shirts?
Yeah,
I mean, I wasn't being funny. You know, that's like 25,000 t-shirts.
You need an organization like Buddy Ran that allocates, you know, in a systematic way. And I don't really understand what they're all doing.
But I said, where is the money going?
Yeah.
Is this money for this event?
Yeah, that's what I sensed.
This is a $27 million
event? That's what I sensed it was.
And what was told to me is it's going into a fund to help people that can't pay for treatment. I said, how do they get a hold of you? Yeah. How do you know it's honest?
Who do you choose?
Where are you sending
Candy,
them?
Candy, you're being all practical instead of idealistic.
And by the way, if the goal is to raise awareness, then that needs an organization that is ongoing, that's going to need to be existing for that purpose.
I think we as a community of clinicians need to reach out and educate Washington rather than the other way around, and rather the con jobs that are going on. When the Obama administration decided to cut off prescription opiates, nobody talked to me. Nobody talked to you. I could have told them what's going to happen.
Well,
there's going to be a heroin epidemic. Yeah. And they didn't ask anybody from our
thank
side
God.
The
of
new
the aisle.
Drug czar is in recovery.
Yeah, thank God Botticelli's in recovery. I mean, that's the thing I like. I've spoken to him.
Me
guy.
Too.
Good guy.
I was kind of shockingly impressed.
Yeah, me too. But not super clinically sophisticated, so he doesn't understand all this landscape that we're all having to deal with.
But do you understand now, and you know Big Pharma is my big my target. Now that it's a heroin epidemic, now it's bad. Now
yeah,
it's illicit.
Right.
Now
right.
it's bad people
you're
again,
right.
Candy.
And
you know?
Who's bringing
and
in
it
the
started,
fentanyl?
The Chinese are bringing in the fentanyl.
Well, but I want to hear more about Aunt Candy's assessment of you as in your early days, because
like it is now.
I'm wondering if she makes issue of the same things I do.
Narcissism.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, I just remembered thinking, where did he come from? You know, yeah. That we started with that.
Well, he was a ghost in my world. I knew him when he was using.
So did I, by the way.
When I was relapsing, you knew me.
Yes.
He knew me when I was purely using.
Purely into it. Really into it.
I remember going through my husband's community being a musician. You won't believe what this guy did. He fell off the stage. You know, you were the first of many.
Famous. Famous.
It was a famous fall. And,
broke my leg.
Didn't get you sober?
No. But
no,
it looked
I had
good.
To have medicine for it.
People.
I broke my leg.
He broke his leg and went, oh, that's awesome. That's what Tom Arnold told me when he was in one period of sort of kind of sobriety. He wrecked his car, motorcycle, or something. He said he could hear the ambulance coming in the background. He went, oh, this is awesome. This is the best.
I just want to be in a car wreck.
A little belated.
No, but, you know, I think there were several of us that I could kind of see through to reality, that there were a few people that liked to, you know, have their name dropped. There were a few people that were the worker bees, and it was you and me.
Yeah.
And I mean, there wasn't anything I wasn't willing to do other than something that was scary, like I'm not going to go take a gun away from
somebody. But didn't you learn a lot there? Here's the first assignment I had there. Buddy said, go back through the charts, call the phone number on there and ask them if they're still sober. Like, that was my thing, to do the census that they were going to post, right? Yeah. So 70% of the phone numbers are disconnected.
Shocking.
So all the thing was to see if they were sober was you get them on the phone, you ask, hey, are you still sober? This is Bob from MAP calling. I'm doing a follow-up. And then I came to Buddy with the thing. It took me like 2 weeks to do. I said, here's the people that say they're sober, but some of them I don't know if they were telling the truth.
Well, you know, there's a place out there that I'm not going to mention that says they have a 78% chance of success, and they call you and you lie to them.
Yeah. So, but then I said, what do I do with these 70% of the people? The phone number doesn't work anymore. He goes, you can't pull them. I go, well, we can assume if they got their phone disconnected, they're back on drugs. And so I've never trusted any, you know, any kind of success rates of any treatment programs ever, because that was my first job, and the way it was so perverted.
I was there wasn't charts.
the only way you really could tell is in your alumni program. You actually have to
if
see
they're
them,
showing
you have
up
to see them on a regular basis.
Yeah, but they're always on tour.
Yeah, and they, you know, there's a lot of things. A lot of the original crew that got sober in MAP ended up working in treatment, starting like Wes, the thing I did the other night, the Rock to Recovery, brings music into treatment centers that can't afford it and stuff like that.
Music into treatment centers?
Yeah, play music with the clients, music therapy.
Interesting.
Well, there's a place in Nashville now that has a studio.
Yeah, there's again, a couple of them.
There's another. So there's another fundraiser for music therapy. Like we, let's get it together, guys. Let's get together.
Well, the Fuse Man of the Year, the first year, they raised $26,000. And I think didn't last year they raised like $5.8 million.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is that?
Music Cares.
Oh.
The original things. But it was fun being a part of that whole thing. And I look at musicians as a model. Like, we take care of our own, even when we don't like each other and we're in competition with
each
other.
Or don't like their music.
Yeah, I don't like their music. It was weird.
But you know,
but there was a higher truth that involved that map.
To be doing this work properly, though, you have to have a certain what I call talent, right? And part of it is your own recovery. Part of it is a deep connection and understanding with the people with the condition and its manifestations, all of its manifestations.
Well,
so you can kind of sense when people are lying, you can sense when people are using, you can sense when people are connecting, you know, when they're bullshitting. You guys know that stuff.
Oh, I've got a great bullshit monitor.
No, you guys are, listen, Bob would always have to, this is why you have to be around recovering people when you work in the field, because I'd literally come out of working with a patient, I go, Bob, oh my God, this guy was just telling me about this horrible trauma, he connected with me.
Oh.
And Bob goes, yeah, he wants to get high. He figures you can get him high. And
that's
so,
called drug seeking.
No, but tell him, we had one of the greatest clients, it was a little kid, he looked like 19 years old, he tells his story to Blum and Drew that he's an Iraqi veteran soldier and he has PTSD.
He's 19?
He looked 19. Oh. Remember the kid?
He was 24, yeah.
Yeah. So they started ordering Carlson to come down and PTSD therapy and finally let it slip to, you know, on a side conversation with me. And I go, dude, I thought you were in the Army. And he goes, no, not really.
Oh, stuff like that all the time.
Not really.
And so,
that day I was.
But in his mind, he wanted to join the Army at a certain point in his life. And so he just followed that kind of sympathy card.
Well, I did have a plaque that says, if your lips are moving, you're lying. So I kind of went with that always.
All right, we got to take a little break here. We'll be right back for this. All right, we're back, and we got a call now. We've got somebody
who's follow-up
call, and we thought Candy would have a chance to bring in on this one, too. It's the first call was a mother-in-law regarding her son-in-law's DMT use, and that was concerning.
Mm-hmm.
And we have not only Tracy, the mother-in-law, but we also have Holly, the wife here, the daughter of Tracy. Holly, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm a huge fan, and really, really appreciate the work you do, and I'm so happy to be able to talk to you about this issue.
You bet. I got three of us here today. So what's going on with your husband?
So back in December, he, you know, was really holding on to this DMT addiction. He finally agreed to give it up and has stopped doing that since then, but has kind of just had periods of, you know, being sober for a little while, falling back into alcohol use. We moved to Seattle recently, and there's legal marijuana there. So now, basically since he stopped doing DMT, he's kind of just been cross-addicting to various other things. And he started doing smoking weed to manage chronic foot pain that he has, is kind of his reason that he's giving for it. But, you know, I've kind of been in recovery for a long time, or at least involved with recovery. Like, I'm going to Al-Anon now.
That's great.
And so to me, it seems pretty clear that it's basically just he's kind of found an excuse to find something new to use. And so
what are the various things he's using? You said DMT and pot. What else?
He was using
alcohol.
ketamine. And yeah, mainly it's just
he getting into the kratom. Has he gotten down that path yet?
Yeah, at one point.
Yeah.
So what I always recommend is there's old rules that no one uses anymore called ASAM criteria. And so I don't care if your foot hurts or not. If your life is being negatively affected in your interpersonal relationships, obviously his wife is calling three clinicians to ask questions about addiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Does he work and go to school? Is he a productive provider?
Yeah, so, okay, so that's kind of the problem is he has his own business and he works from home and it's just him. And so he doesn't have to go to an office. He doesn't have
nodding.
To
no.
see anyone face to face. So he can really get away with, he can work drunk, he can work high, and he does, and does it often. Yeah. And it doesn't seem to negatively impact his work. And so that's the thing that he holds on to is like, you know, when I say, hey, you have a problem, you're destroying your health, you're destroying our relationship. He just points to, well, I'm making money, I'm successful, so I don't have a problem.
How old is he?
He's 36.
And when you said he's been sober, was he in the program or just not using for periods
of time? No. He just basically would do like a 30-day.
So, all right, let's see
what let's get the third get, one, the third
but
thing.
But then there's another kind of element to all this, so that he also has pretty severe mental health issues. He has recently was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
But I don't know how you...
How is that?
I don't know how you diagnose borderline if somebody is using...
The drug addict. That's called the drug addict.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have been reading a book about it. I Hate You, Don't Leave Me. And
yeah, it's a great book.
It's really... I mean, everything I've read is like exactly him. Every single thing in there. Wild personality swings, outbursts of anger. I mean, and it's pretty severe.
But I will just tell you that diagnosing a personality disorder in a using addict is inappropriate. Now, he may have, I'm not saying he doesn't have borderline personality, but a male borderline is kind of rare. Mm-hmm. And a drug addict looks just like a personality disorder. I mean, that's just what they look like, especially with all the hallucinogens. No telling what his brain processing.
But I want to give her ammunition to argue, because he's going to say, my foot hurts. The doctor told me, da-da-da, I got you don't like me, da-da-da, fuck Dr. Drew, blah-blah-blah. You know, I know what he's going to say. Right?
Well, you know,
so you got to be able to go boom, boom, boom.
Candy.
Boom, boom, boom would... I know all these things are really severe, and I'm grateful that you're providing for this family, but you need to get in detox, get off of everything, and then let's see what hurts.
Yeah, well, and I've said that before, too, and then he gets wildly angry.
Well, so kind of what?
Like, well, this is Candy Finnegan.
This is right action. Well, right action needs no defense. You can't defend that he's getting away with this. I mean, because he's making money. I have parents say to me all the time, my son couldn't be shooting heroin. He makes straight A's.
Yeah.
The same thing.
Oh, and I see through it all. And so that's why we, you know, have gotten into countless fights. I actually am not even living at home right now because
good.
He's become so unstable that I can't be around him. And I've told him that I want him to get sober before, you know, in order for me to come home, I want him to face his addiction. And he basically is just like, I'd be willing to give up everything except weed because that's my pain management. And I mean, I know better. I've been down this road before with him with DMT.
My foot's hurting.
Substances. It's always something.
Let me get...
It is always something. You're absolutely correct.
Of course.
And he basically is like, I can't, you know, saying I'm working so hard on my borderline. Like, that's the main issue. I need to work on that before I can work on this.
I love that. I'm working on my borderline.
Which personality?
My favorite thing is when people go into psychoanalysis and so they can drink.
Yeah.
But like, what is he doing for his so-called borderline? What is the treatment?
He's been doing, like, some workbooks with his therapist. The therapist is having him get into a group. I don't know if he's started it yet because I haven't been at home. But.
All right. Is it something called DBT, Dialectical Behavioral Therapy?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's fine. And the DBT may be helpful for him. I certainly don't object to that. But you need to call that therapist and tell him or her how much drugs and alcohol is being used and how chronic this is. Tracy, I'm wondering if you have any input or insights on this.
Oh, I just think my feelings are we've tried so much with him, and he's willing to tank it all for the drugs. And I think we just we know enough to know that this isn't working. And I think we were just hopeful to get on with you and say, so yeah, what do you do? I mean, she's not living at home. They're doing 2 weeks without even communicating at all because he was so toxic to communicate with. And
he was being abusive, sending tons of abusive messages to me and stuff, even when I wasn't home. So,
well, I'm sure he's really happy.
Yeah. Well, I guess the main thing that I kind of was curious to get your take on is, like, is there even such a thing as, you know, if he makes enough progress in his DBT treatment that he then gets to the point where he can see the destructiveness of his addiction and is willing to face that, or is it really that like you have to tackle the addiction first?
We'll take a little poll around the room. Let's just be super clear. We don't know him. We don't know what's going on with him. Right. It's very inappropriate for us to, you know, do anything, but say anything other than in our experience in cases like this, I won't say I've never seen it work out this way. If people stay engaged in treatment, eventually people figure out what's going on with them and start to bring the hammer down. So I'm always just grateful when someone's engaged in treatment. But it doesn't, if indeed he's an addict that he seems to be, treating the personality disorder is not going to be the issue. Would you agree, Candy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's just, you know, kind of changing deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, which one's going to go down next? I mean, he doesn't have a realistic view of himself.
Yeah.
And anger is one of the wonderful defenses, because the first thing that happens is that you guys all run away from him and let him just sit there by himself and get high.
Mm-hmm.
What should they do?
Well, don't ask the interventionist.
Well, we actually thought about doing an intervention at one point, and he just expressed such disdain for 12 step and recovery and all of that that I thought it wouldn't.
Well, intervention doesn't have anything to do with 12 step. It has to do with bringing the denial of addiction to the forefront. And I have to tell you, quite honestly, if he didn't buy into it, I would certainly hope that his friends and his wife and his mother-in-law would buy into what you have to do to save yourself. And thank God you've already started in on that process. But an intervention is a family disease quick fix. And when I say quick fix, it's a couple of meetings that should change your life so that you don't let this toxic person take over.
Go ahead,
I was just going to say, we've done that with him. We're all that he has left.
So yeah, he's pushed brother, all his friends away, all his family away. He doesn't speak to anyone anymore.
His brother committed suicide, and his father was hospitalized with a mental illness last year, and he has no relationship with any of them. So Holly and I are really all he has left, and we've sat down and done the intense conversations and the, look, you're going to lose us, and
he's basically this is my pain management. This is my medicine.
Yeah,
that's a new thing in America, you know.
Pain management.
I know. Yeah. Crazy.
Pot for everything.
But hang on. Did he have horrible trauma growing up?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that does need to be treated, but you normally wouldn't treat that until he's been sober a long time.
Yeah. So. I mean, you're putting a Band-Aid on open heart surgery.
Yeah.
He's had trauma his whole childhood, so abusive relationship with parents. He found his brother when he committed suicide. His parents quietly blamed him for that. So lots of trauma in his life and lots of pain.
I'm going to ask something, trying to separate it all is hard. I'm going to ask something I don't normally, I'm not necessarily advising this, but does he have any kind of relationship with a church or a spiritual organization of any kind?
No.
Because you know, sometimes you got to use everything that gets through to him.
The problem is there's nothing. Like, he really has disconnected himself from everything.
From my experience, the finances will slowly erode and fall apart, and then he'll get more willing.
Maybe he'll end up on the street.
Yeah, that's more will. That's where I was.
Well, that's going to say, what about facilitating an arrest? Why not next time he's doing something illicit, get him arrested?
Well,
the hard thing is that now, we live in Seattle and weed is legal.
No, I get it.
It's hard.
Well, I don't think they want you slammed when you're driving.
There's that.
He doesn't. We don't have a car. We live in, that's the thing. He's really set up his whole life so that he can kind of get away with this.
He can live in Seattle with no car. He is a good drug addict.
I just want to make a side note. Lyft and Uber are really protecting alcoholics and drug addicts.
Well, protecting the rest of us, too. Protecting the rest of us from them, by the way.
That's true. I'm always looking at the antisocial angle.
I have to tell you, I'm deeply sorry.
Me too.
To you guys, to having to watch somebody that you love really disintegrate before your very eyes. The only thing I'm going to tell you is keep reading. Don't believe everything he says. Keep into your own recovery that you didn't cause it. You can't cure it. And, God knows you can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
And, don't keep your eyes on him as much as you do on yourself, because he loves the attention. He's a little bad boy.
And I get the sense, too, there's more than just weed going on here.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever,
I think he's doing DMT again, yeah.
Yeah, whatever that is, because the denial is so profound here that weed, you know, doesn't sound like enough. And
benzos, probably.
But that's all going to, some crisis is ahead. He's either going to get psychotic or he's going to lose. Something's coming with the, with the escalated
abuse.
Yeah, it has
to. Well, we all, everybody involved here knows this will not sustain itself.
No.
It will change.
And I'm glad you're taking care of yourself and you're not living under that toxic situation. And, you know.
I would get myself a therapist, too. I mean,
I was just going to say, why don't you get some help?
I've had one for a couple years.
All right. Good.
What does he or she say?
She thinks I should be done.
Okay. I kind of feel that
way, too. I that's what I've been thinking, but I don't want to say
it.
And it's hard. But it's like we have addiction in our family, and I really I understand what he's going through.
Life is too short for all this nonsense.
And I'm a codependent, so of course I want to fix him.
Good girl.
Well, let me tell you, but here's the deal. You guys, let me tell you just this little bit I'm observing. I don't know if it's relevant or not, but you guys are codependent, of course, and you do understand that condition, and you're doing something about it. Good on you. I think you're a little codependent on each other or something. You're going to have to watch that, too. You're going to have to watch your codependency everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's affecting this because, you know, we don't know you enough to know, but it's there. And, of course, it's there because you're both codependent. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's anyone's place to make the decision for you what you do with your marriage. No one should be telling you what to do.
Oh, no. I had too many people tell me what to do.
Yeah. And so you make your own decision. You do what you got to do, but Bob's point, I think, is the one. It's strange. Those same words were sort of ringing in my head. It was like, God, life is so short. This
life
these
is
poor
short,
people.
Man.
And he is just eroding your
ability. I see so many people waste their 20s and 30s away just worrying about some drug addict or another. I watch it all the time.
Here's what I want you guys to promise each other. That when you talk and when you see each other, the first thing out of your mouth is not going to be, have you heard from him? What's
good.
He doing?
That's good.
You know,
there you go.
Go out to dinner and talk about anything other than him and go to a movie. Get away from what has absolutely taken over your life.
There you go. If we give you nothing else but that, I think
That's the way to go.
I think that's a
enjoy
solid.
Life.
Yeah. Go to Old Cella.
We were talking about San Francisco.
Oh, my God, there's so many fabulous things there, and believe you me, he can't make that trip.
Yeah, do that. And the healthier you guys are, the better.
Go on a vacation. That was a good
one. All right, ladies, thank you so much.
I'm
so sorry.
Thank you.
Thank
right,
you.
Take care.
Thanks so much, Dr. Drew. You've been such a help to me over the years. I really appreciate the work you do.
It's our privilege. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, my heart aches for those stories like that. Ugh. Because I, too, am codependent. Let's take a little break. Be right back after this.
All conversations and information exchanged during participation in the This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest podcast or interaction with drdrew.com website is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction per se. Nothing on these podcasts or posted on this site supplements or supersedes the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the sites or podcasts.
Well, everybody, the Bergamet Pro Plus, you've heard me talk about it before. If you have high cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar up, dangerous abdominal fat, want to reduce your chance of heart disease, that's called the metabolic syndrome. You should consider Bergamet Pro Plus. It's 100% natural, made from the citrus bergamot fruit from Italy. Talk to your doctor about this. Again, these are things that need to be done with a physician to determine what the appropriate course of treatment is for you. But cardiologists worldwide are using and recommend Bergamet Pro Plus. It's previously only available as a prescription. Now you can get it over the counter as a supplement. The benefits of Bergamet Mega Plus is that it's much stronger. It's a physician strength formula. Particularly if you're statin intolerant or concerned about taking a statin, you can really improve your vascular health, or maybe you just prefer a natural alternative. This might be perfect for you. Even those on statins sometimes will take Bergamet in addition to not just help further reduce their cholesterol, but also change the insulin resistance issues that people get into with the metabolic syndrome. And only the bergamot products are approved by the prestigious Accademia di Bergamotto in Italy. We actually talked to a woman from Bergamot the last time we were in here, and she was saying they use a lot of the fruit there because of the polyphenols in the fruit there. Numerous clinical trials have checked and verified its effectiveness. I've read these studies. I was impressed. That's what got me behind this product. Millions of dollars have been spent on the research, and they continually improve the bergamot products, so they are, in fact, the world's best. With heart disease being the number one killer of men and women in the U.S., what are you waiting for? Invest wisely in your lifelong health with Bergamet Pro Plus. Go to bergamet.com and order your Bergamet Pro Plus today. Bergamet.com, Bergamet for life.
Don't you want to add something, Drew?
What's that?
You take it yourself.
Did I take it myself?
There you go. That's the best. That's the best part of the commercial.
Start with that.
There you go.
Well, full disclosure, I got a little bit of statin side effect, so you know it's a statin because you can get, you know.
Oh, really?
It's an effective drug. Yeah.
So let's get on with a modern world. Hang on.
Do you want to decompress after we just heard?
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to talk, before Candy leaves, I want to talk about the modern treatment era and what she thinks of it.
But go to Weekly Infusion. We did a long thing with her, with Bruce and I, on that. And
where do you, well, let me just ask,
where do you
send people?
But I asked her that. Go to that website. She gave us specific ones in specific regions.
And Cumberland Heights.
We all kind of had the same ideas.
You know, we all kind of like the same places.
Yeah.
I certainly can tell you much easier all the ones I don't like.
And there are a lot.
And there's a lot.
Well, let me share a trick I have with you. So when I talk to a parent like we just talked to, right, and the person is going to go to treatment, I ask if they've ever been in treatment before, and when they haven't, I send them to Cry Help because they wouldn't know any difference.
Oh, that's good.
It's worked magnificently.
I know. The success they've had there for years and years. I mean,
but you can't get these millennial kids to go there because they've heard about it. They've been at other treatment centers. So when they've never, when they know nothing about treatment,
no massages.
I put them in Cry Help, and it works great.
Yeah. Well, we know the good places.
Yeah.
You know, we know.
I mean, you know, they're long-standing, but even some of the long-standing have now been bought up, and there's too many
secrets.
We
agreed. Claire also would be a place we could send people. Claire Foundation.
They're going for profit, though, now.
Yeah, and so is Friendly House.
No.
Friendly House is just
got... You're kidding me. Did you know this,
just too? Got their license.
Well, them going for a profit, if they don't get greedy, doesn't mean they have to deteriorate.
No, everybody's...
You know
no,
what I mean?
Can we really talk about it? Because I know a lot of clinicians listen to our show. The fact is, they're going after the insurance money, and the insurance dictates mediocre care.
Dictates.
Mediocre care. And you find yourself just serving the master, right? Which is, you know what the insurance companies want? One-on-ones.
Yeah, but Bob, who
wants to sit and listen to a drug addict talk for 50 minutes?
Ooh.
Twice a week.
Don't call me.
Now we were being very flip about that. It depends where in their treatment process that
happens.
No,
week two. It's appropriate. Week two,
it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
But I would argue that if you had a good professional person advocating, you can, you know, remember we used to fight the insurance down. We used to fight them down, and we didn't change our program based on their
BS.
Yeah,
but one thing that you've been out of the game a long time, we're getting 8-10 a day. These places are getting 2,300 a day. They're not fighting anything.
God, that's
they're getting 4,500 a day, but for cash pay, it's $3,000.
It's a waste. That's a total waste.
It's more than chemotherapy, Drew.
It is more than chemo. Here's what I don't understand. How is it not against the law to scholarship someone that has no money, and you say to them, I'm going to scholarship you to come here for 90 days. And when they walk in the door and they're goofy, they say, we had a brilliant idea. We're going to buy you.
Insurance.
We're going to pay for
it. Yeah, they buy insurance.
An insurance policy that's going to cover so you can stay the whole 90 days.
No, but what happened was Health Net has left the state of California because of that, because they had the best policy for addiction treatment.
Do you guys, it just breaks my heart when I have these conversations.
I know. See, he's going to get all the press.
Me
and Candy are fighting the good fight.
I
got to
tell you
something. Come fight with us, Drew.
I said, so in other words, when this check comes to Jack Smith in the P.O. box that is connected to the treatment center, And the treatment center, of course, does not have him sign the check. They sign the check and put it into a trust. And then the trust pays for his treatment. Now, I got to tell you something. By at least standards of July 1st, this was not against the law.
I know. It's crazy.
I'm so glad I'm
so anyways,
not doing that a day.
But the treatment has changed because of insurance, Drew, and we're going to change it back to the basics and back to the nuts and bolts with a new modern twist, which is job education, job placement, training,
life skills.
For the young ones. For all the young ones. That
we're it's 70% millennials.
Well, come on. 42-year-olds that have never worked.
Yep.
You know, let's get them a job.
But speaking of work, we've swept past this a couple times. I want to do it one more time. Bob and his talent. And his, I'm wondering
well, standing next to Buddy, I look sane.
So,
well, I think that's correct.
So Bob has great insight, great instincts, knows the program inside and out, knows when people are bullshitting.
Well, he was really new.
Oh, you haven't worked with him since we trained him up. Because we turned him into an administrator.
I watched you train him.
This was in the beginning.
But I think one of the gifts that Buddy Arnold had, among other things, in being a white saxophone jazz junkie, which, Doug, you know, from New York.
Was he white? I couldn't tell what his ethnicity was. I was never sure.
He kept saying, and I'm a Jew.
He was another worldly type person. Yes. You didn't know what his nationality was.
From a different era.
So
he made up what he was.
He taught me how to go run groups. Greatest.
But what he did more than anything with you and me and a couple of other people, and truthfully, Paul Williams, was he saw something really special in the way we approached this, and it was mainly not judgmental. Because I remember people going, ew, I wouldn't do that. Ew, I wouldn't go. Ew, I hate that person. I don't even like his music.
I never looked at it from that way. I always looked at it in terms of the sort of active sort of involvement you had, but you're right, the willingness to be actively involved that way.
Well, but you know, first of all, you had to really understand Buddy, because he was truly a little lost soul for many years before he met Carol and his wife, he was looking for purpose.
He found
it. You know, he worked at Beverly Glen, he worked at Beverly Hills Hospital,
CPC Westwood.
That's where I did my training with CPC.
The outpatient program there?
No, it was an inpatient.
I was in the lockdown psych ward there for a while.
Did Bob's antisocial flair ever get in the way of him?
No, because he was always so invested in helping people that he wasn't like not invested in everything that was going on. I mean, he asked a lot of questions, and I kept saying, "Buddy, can you?" He goes, he likes to go over things and make sure he does it right.
And get the money.
Yeah.
My antisocial thing worked well in raising money. I can tell you that.
You were fabulous. Because you'd harp on people.
Let me tell the story. The third time we go back to the Chili Peppers to do another fundraiser, Flea goes, you know, we could do it for pediatric AIDS. You're not the only nonprofit in Los Angeles. And it was the first time it ever dawned on me that there are other nonprofits
let's take a pact here amongst ourselves. I'm not sure we'll be able to do this, but why should pediatric AIDS be the only cool not-for-profit in town? Why can't we have other not-for-profits that serve
different
critical things for the time?
It always turns around about money.
Well, but I think those things turn around personality. I mean, somebody that
chooses
everyone,
that cause.
That's
and
right.
Buddy chose that cause, and then I latched onto it. And we wrote it as far as we could, far beyond what I think Hillary Rosen wanted.
Poor Hillary.
She just wanted it to blend with
that
music
Dave
cares.
Runman, yeah.
Music cares. There were so many meetings. I was like, I'll get more money from the Chili Peppers. Don't join forces with music cares.
I'm having lunch tomorrow at the tennis club.
I remember that.
Who plays tennis?
No, but you understand, there was a pathway, Drew, for years, for MAP to dissolve into Music Cares. It was an open invitation.
But
Buddy fought it. I was his soldier fighting it, getting money enough to survive.
Why it didn't work until he died. Because they wouldn't employ Carol.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I also think that they're, you know, I don't think anybody could be Buddy Arnold's boss. I don't see how it would have worked. Like, Mike Green would be his boss? Oh. No way. Ugh. And they don't make people like that anymore, Drew. And I latched my antisocial thing. I latched onto him, yeah. And it served.
I know, but in your antisocial situation, you were the first one out the door to go help an addict.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had nothing else to do. Well,
purpose. And now you have two kids, and yeah. look who you are.
Now I got stuff to do.
Do you guys still share cases or anything, or do you still?
No, we haven't for a long time. It's weird. I don't have that many cases. We run into each other
at strange events, and we always hone in on each other. I always go, "Can I sit by you? We hate the same people." Yeah.
All those marketing things, oh my God. But I only do really court things now. I felt was my path. Like about after we left Los Encinas and after my outpatient failed, I thought, you know what? Court, the stuff Timmons used to do.
I don't mind that. Bob Timmons said, just get me into court.
I don't mind getting paid for it. Because they pay lawyers 10 times what they're paying me, and all the lawyer's doing is keeping them out of jail. I'm actually going to help them maybe change their life.
I think that court liaisons are the most overlooked thing in drug courts.
Well, that's what I do.
I always had trouble actually getting paid to do the work.
For the court?
No, for the addiction treatment.
Yeah, I always liked it.
It always felt
and
very...
And certainly nowadays, becoming a millionaire off other people suffering, I can't do it.
That's why we get into this business.
No, my God. But I found a way to make a good living working in the courts. I don't mind it. I don't feel ashamed of taking money for alternative sentencing because it involves something else. It's not just the teaching of how to live again and making millions of dollars.
But alternative sentencing doesn't have any monitoring, and that's why it fails.
Oh, no, it does now.
Well,
because they're much more free with it. I got two guys. One guy's got two ankle monitors on, alcohol and GPS. They're monitoring people now.
Good.
They're really not arresting people anymore. For heroin, why would Drew. They? For heroin, they don't arrest people. They give them a ticket.
Wow.
What's crazy?
How much is a ticket? They don't pay it anyway because they got to go out and score.
It's an appearance that they don't appear.
Appearance that they don't appear, yeah. All
right. So then there's a warrant, and then what?
Remember when the first things about marijuana, I think it was like in the 80s where it was, personal use, so you got to show up in court, right? And they didn't arrest you? They're doing that with heroin now.
Shush.
Well, first time I went to London, I remember it was in the 70s and, well, I'd gone with my parents, but I didn't know about heroin. And they said, that you can sign up as a registered heroin addict.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
went,
oh, yeah.
Oh, why would you do that? Your mom might find out.
See, I don't have any problem with that. I really don't.
Neither do I, but at the time it was astounding. You know, it's because with the golden arm was the only thing I knew.
What's your guys' take on the injection sites? Because they started one in Detroit.
Yeah.
They asked me to come and...
You go and shoot up there.
Yeah, the injection, safe injection.
Yeah, so what do you think? Because Canada's had them forever. Yeah,
and so is Holland, though. They tended not to work in Holland, isn't that right?
In Vancouver and Victoria, they work.
But they didn't work because everybody wasn't from...
Holland.
They were from the United
drug
States.
Drug addict tourists.
Yeah.
Right.
I was one of those. The senior class always wanted to go there.
You know, Amsterdam.
That was a funny thing. You know, I like to talk about the dark and the light, right? So I got to most towns in the world I've seen, and so have you. But I didn't really see them. I only saw where the drugs were sold and a hotel. Now, then I went back sober.
I was lucky enough
to play music sober, right? You know, when I was like 40. And I like these towns are amazing. These towns that you go to, like Holland.
You take pictures of buildings.
They got in one day. I went to the Anne Frank Museum and to the Van Gogh Museum in one day. I'd been to Amsterdam 30 times. Never even knew they were there.
I went in the bar. I don't know about you.
So it was fun. And that's what I hope, you know, our callers' husbands can someday realize.
Ugh.
That's what recovery really is. To be like, this is amazing.
Well, being alive.
Being alive is amazing.
But not just being alive, but living, right?
Yeah.
I mean, alive in the full sense.
I mean, what we always say, you know, you live the life you sing about. And I said, well, what happens if you don't sing?
You know. You and Gloria Scott.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, did you know Gloria Scott? He's mentioned her a million times. I didn't know her.
There was
she
no
thought
other.
She was Janis Joplin, but she didn't sing.
she wore a lot of scarves.
Did she look like it?
She looked like it.
She wanted to look like it. With no plastic surgery.
And with no musical talent whatsoever. She just walked through life thinking she was the second coming of Janis Joplin. But didn't play music.
Oh, no.
Have you seen the documentary on Janis Joplin?
Yes.
No, I haven't. Is it good?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I got married in 69 and moved February of 70 to Marin County from Wichita, Kansas. Wow. I won't go through that. But, you know, everybody was hitchhiking. I thought everybody's cars had broken down at the same time. Why are people making their clothes out of bedspreads? And the whole county smelled like patchouli, which just did not hit it off. I mean, I'm a Chanel number 5. You know, I thought this isn't working for me. And Janis lived down the block. And, I mean, all I knew was there was a whole bunch of, you know, Southern Comfort bottles in her front yard.
Yeah.
I never looked at the person and who they were. They just seemed to be neighbors, and Van Morrison lived up the street. And it was just such an odd situation because I was not into the music scene at all. I had no idea who any Mike played with Jimi Hendrix. And I never heard of him. I mean, you know, it was just...
Wow.
I married the man. I wanted him to be an attorney and play with the Celtics.
That's a
basketball player.
It's harder to play with Jimi Hendrix, actually.
Well, get paid.
Let me back off for a second and ask about intervention. Do you guys see intervention the same way? Do you, Bob, think of intervention?
I don't really do interventions. I'm not good with the families. But I can talk to any addict, and that's what Buddy taught me. I can get any addict to go to treatment.
I said that exact same thing, just to shut you up. I mean, I'll go. You know.
So after Celebrity Rehab got going, we were still working at a hospital, not making any money, right? And Louisha, one of the gals on the show, who's now an interventionist and runs Refuge, she said, you know, maybe if you, me and Shelley, we could do interventions once in a while, make a little dough. And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, I took this class. She got certified in the intervention, right? So we do the first one. This is like the only one, a formal one I've done. Well, we meet with the families, all the stuff you do, right? And I'm just like, I don't know. I just have troubles with the family's codependency. So you guys were very looking at them and very helpful. I'm just like, either, you know.
What is that? Wait, I'm curious. I want to be like that. What is that?
I'm like, it's pretty obvious that they're more wrapped up in this guy's drug addiction than he is.
Right, but they're the ones in pain. I mean, they're the ones awake.
Drinking the poison, expecting everyone to die.
But they're awake and seeing
this. So, years ago, I don't know what it is. I'm not good at tolerating too much of that. But I made it through the 2 days, right? The day before, right? So we're sitting, we're doing it at the parents' house, the sister's there, the intervention, everything's planned. I'm sitting in a chair, the guy walks in, and he realizes right away, and he walks up to me, and he puts his hands out, and he goes, I'll go with you. And I said, oh, great, let's go.
Well, boy, am I successful at this.
Just get away from his codependent family.
So then I said, okay, and Louisha said, Bob, sit down. This is not just about so-and-so. And we had to sit through this.
And listen to all the letters.
And the guy was, he just shrank. He just shrank in his chair.
So now that you've said that and I know how you really feel, I'm not going. How do you like me now?
No, it was hard for 2 or 3 days. And he came to us. He's the guy that when I was sitting with the mother, then get this. So the mother comes for a family session about 8 days in. The guy has an alcohol withdrawal seizure in the family session.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, and the mother kept pushing, I want to sit down and talk with him. And I was like,
he didn't want to talk to you.
It's day eight. Right?
Yeah.
It was fun.
Well, you know, I'm not really good at a lot of things. I've been marketing,
you're good with the parents.
Admissions.
You're good with the parents.
I mean, I've done the whole setup programs, gotten rid of programs, killed people, you know, giving them CPR, all of it. And I'm really, my real gift is interventions. And it's because I have a fascination with telling people the truth.
But isn't it the families you really have effect
on? That's who I have to tell the truth to.
It doesn't get crazy. I have trouble with people not hearing the truth.
Can we go back in intervention history and ask questions? The two that stand out to me the most, I don't know if you did. Yeah, you did the one, was the gal who did Huffer. The Huffer. She's now MFT.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. That's amazing.
The one that touched me the most was the guy who had been champion, lightweight champion of the world as a boxer.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it as long as I live.
Did you do the one, there's another one where the father was so codependent, and to me there
was... Oh, that he used to give her morphine? Oh,
No. And she was running around naked all the time, and the dad would go by the house to drop off money to her. Do you remember that one? I always wonder what happened to the client.
So here's what you can do. You can go on AETV.com, go on intervention, and they have this thing that says legacy. And you can switch and run all through. I do about 5 a month.
So go there.
We should do that for celebrity rehab people.
That's a good idea. We do that maybe at Dr.
Because nobody knows all the successes of celebrity rehab.
Well, Michelle, we need help with this.
Yeah, well, I think that they need to hear how much you made a difference instead of, I mean, certainly not very long ago on the show, person got out and overdosed and died. And then how I found out it was on GoFundMe. Hmm. They were asking me for money, I, by the way, gave them.
For the funeral?
Yeah, and because they were
poor souls. We get crucified because it's celebrity people, right? So if something bad happens, Drew gets blamed. But all the good, there's people that have become psychologists that run programs.
Well, look at, I've known Mackenzie since she was 12.
Max Gray, but 12. Jennifer Ketchum now.
Max, Jennifer Ketchum, Jason Waller.
Yeah.
People don't want to hear these stories, the good ones, on our show, on our version of
I
don't know why.
I don't think, because you aren't showing them.
All right, we'll do that. And you go to Candy
Finnegan.
Have
a reunion and have all the real good ones come, sit in a circle and say, not what was your process of being on our show, tell us about your lives now.
Yeah. The journey.
CandyFinnegan.com, at Candy Finnegan. Bob, anything
She's
coming up?
She's the best. I'll see you at the next marketing thing.
All right.
The redheaded Begalia.
And we will all see you next time.